Does the time go? Must we let it end? Where does the time go? Gone too soon, my friend. And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there.
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end? And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there. I will see
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. How are you doing out there? Labor Day weekend. Hope everybody is having fun around here. I certainly am. In the studio having fun here is Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director.
Well, it's really easy to have fun when it's 1,000 degrees outside, and then our studio is just a real comfortably cool, maybe, 72 degrees?
Yeah, it's going to be fun in the sun today. Don't stay in the sun too much, folks. It's going to be warm today and maybe a little bit not quite so warm tomorrow. But what do you expect? Michigan summer, and if you don't like the weather, just wait 15
minutes.
That's
exactly right.
That's what they always used to say in Michigan. Now, I think because of global warming, it's probably wait 5 minutes, but give it a chance. Okay. Also on the show is Joe Sullivan from the show just preceding us. Can't get him out of here. He loves this place. Joe Sullivan, welcome to the Journal.
Thank you.
Today.
Good to be here.
And, of course, we're all the volunteers are going to be doing their shows this weekend. Some have pre-recorded them because they're getting out of town. And just at the outset, if you are going to go out of town and you're listening to our live broadcast, not the podcast, sometime next week of this show from our website, WHFR.FM, if you are listening to the live show on Friday, August 31st, then just be careful with that driving. Okay, a lot of people on the roads haven't been for a while. A lot of people think they're desperate to get somewhere or get back from somewhere, and maybe they're not being as careful as they should. So take care, as we always tell you, but especially on weekends like this where there's a lot of people on the roads and stuff happens. It's just the odds, right?
I think that the gas prices are intentionally high to keep the roads safer. Because I look at them as they go up. Inch by inch, or the inch up by my house, and I know that I like the look of my car parked in the drive better than actually physically going out, buying gas, and there you go. Are those yours, Jay? Oh, all right. Anyway, I wondered if it's a good time
little,
for me to bring
little studio drama here.
Bring up the fact that I was at a meeting on Tuesday night.
Yes, our first topic is the Dearborn Heights Council meeting and the special on-site reporter Dennis Reimars himself.
Well, the interesting thing I filed a couple articles that will be in Sunday's edition of the Press and Guide regarding things that were brought up at the meeting, and it's really interesting because, as you know, the Honorable Margaret Van Houten was appointed by Governor Snyder to the Third Circuit Court, Criminal Division, Wayne County, and that happened in May. And since that time, there has been an open seat on the city council. There have been six council members, and that seventh seat has been open. Mm-hmm. And I learned a lot, and I'll summarize it very quickly. I learned a lot about the process here. According to what I read, the rules of order, if you will, it should have been on the ballot every single meeting. So every 2 weeks, or the second Tuesday and fourth Tuesday of each month, is a regularly scheduled council meeting. And from my understanding, it should have been on every single meeting on the agenda for a vote. But that is at the discretion, of course, of the council chair, Ken Barron. And he felt, and I have to say, rightly so, that the vote wouldn't have changed. So what's the point of doing the same thing every meeting? And I guess you can say as a formality, but he decided,
it's required.
Well,
duh.
Yes, I think he does have that at his discretion. So it wasn't necessarily, it is procedure, but it wasn't mandatory. I guess that's the best way to do it. So here's the deal. We had three people that were nominated. One of them dropped out. And when the third person dropped out, he had been nominated by Tom Barry. Tom Barry decided, look, this has gone on long enough. He looked at the two candidates, one of them being Joe Kaczynski, one of them being Lisa Ferens, and he said, you know what, I'm going to evaluate the two candidates and pick one, which he did. And it was put back on the agenda for Tuesday. Joe Kaczynski, who was there at the meeting, got the required four votes. He needed four votes, and he is now the newest counsel. Now, this is important. He's an interim counsel person. Mm-hmm. He's learning about the issues, he's still campaigning because on November 6th, he has to maintain his spot. He has to win that general election against Lisa Ferens. And then he only keeps that spot for a year when that term expires in 2013.
Right.
So this is kind of, you think about it, this is a weird time to come aboard.
Well,
right?
It's almost as crazy as the Thaddeus McCotter resignation and then the special election. We have to tell you out there in Dearborn Heights, folks, next Tuesday, September 5 is when you and other contiguous areas to Dearborn Heights are going to be voting to on someone to replace McCotter. And that's only going to be for a few months because, first of all, the district changes because of gerrymandering.
Exactly.
But in November, there's going to be another election about the new district and
right.
Who's going to represent them. Now, remember, I've talked about this last week and the week before. Where did the $650,000 cost come from? Well, I still don't know the details, but guess what? You say, well, we should blame McCotter for retiring, quitting. Let's call it what it is. Quitting
sure,
when
sure.
he did, forcing this tremendous expense on taxpayers. He just finished up his term, maybe didn't go vote so often, you know.
Right.
I mean, a lot of representatives don't vote. So he just don't worry about my vote. I'm just staying home. And nobody would keep paying him and everything. But he resigned, and so he forced this special election on this old district. And this is in Jack Lessenberry's editorial in the Metro Times this week.
Mm-hmm.
There would not have had to be the special election for $650,000 on September 5th, but it would have been transferred to November if there were only one Democrat and one Republican competing for that seat.
Hmm.
However, there's four Republicans and one Democrat in that election on next Tuesday. Now, we could read the names, but it was no one I ever heard of.
Right.
So, but the point is, if the Republican Party wanted to act extremely noble here, now, I don't think you can stop anyone from getting their name on the ballot.
No.
They say they're Republican. The party doesn't have to say, yes, you are Republican. They don't have to approve of it.
Right.
But if you are a good Republican and you wanted to shield the party from this criticism of one of your own, or formerly one of your own, Thaddeus McCotter, causing this extra $650,000. Check me if I'm not wrong. It's more than $500,000. Okay?
It is. By my math. Yeah.
And you know, it's all his fault. It's his fault. Okay, he could have done it several other ways, but guess what? The Republicans, not the party per se, but they could have put some pressure on maybe. Of course, they tried to put pressure on the guy running for senator in Missouri to get out of the race after his legitimate rape comment about pregnancies not happening really and during legitimate rapes.
Well, that'll hurt your party.
Well, you know, and we know that Paul Ryan was instructed to call him and say, and told him, get out of the race.
Right.
It's almost as good as Mitt Romney, right? Number two guy.
No comment.
He said, no, I won't. My voters got me here, and I'm going to stick it out and so on. Well, that's, you know, that's sort of his choice, but I'm just saying the Republican Party can't force people in these elections. But you'd think for the good of the Republican image, because I'm sure they're going to get the $650,000 thrown back at them somehow.
Oh,
if
yeah.
not for that race, then some other race like next year or whatever, if not for November. And all it would have taken is just having one Republican and one Democrat looking to fill up his seat, and then the whole election could have been shifted to November.
Right.
And it wouldn't have had to be this extra $650,000. Unbelievable how that works out. And I don't know if anybody thinks about these things or not in advance. So anything else? The story in Dearborn Press and Guide, Dennis, from last Sunday, in talking about the console, they were going to change trash regulations.
It was like that was a preview article more than anything
right,
else.
Yes.
And what had happened was the trash regulations, very simple. Of course, that was brought up a long time ago by our own Councilman Annette Apigian, also a member of our staff. And he got what he wanted, which is, and I don't think he cared so much about the two-hour time, but now residents of Dearborn Heights, when they're on the day their garbage is collected, they do not have to have it back from the curb by 6 o'clock. Now it can be 8 p.m. And a lot of that has to do with the contract with Waste Management. They have until 7 or 8 anyway.
Okay.
But the main brunt of Ned's proposal was, let's make sure the garbage cans are out of view when they're not at the curb. Mm-hmm. And that is now part of the ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other ordinance that actually passed was regarding fireworks. And this was something interesting. There's a distinction when you're talking about fireworks between three things: use, discharge, and ignition. And use is the key thing, because that's basically the legislation, the recent legislation in the state affects the use. The consumers now are allowed to buy different, more broad range of fireworks, and they can shoot them off basically, Jay, any time, night or day. And even the city's noise ordinances can't do anything about it.
Wow.
So basically things pass, but it's more about discharge and ignition. And Gary Miyake, the council for the city of Dearborn Heights, is he's stated more than once, his hands are tied. You cannot do something that is...
goes against state law.
State law, but
sure.
You know what? Yeah. The person who wrote the law said, hey, I never, and I wish I had his name on my tongue, but I do not. He said, you know what? I didn't think it was going to be like this. So they're reviewing that law right now.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones. There was a pet ordinance, but that was a first reading, so that will be on the agenda for the next scheduled meeting, September 11th,
as well as... Are they banning pit bulls or something?
No, but they are putting a little bit more stringent rules on tethering. You've had a dog. You understand. Leaving it outside for 3 hours isn't cool, is it, on a hot day? Would you do that? Leave it outside?
Well, in a shelter of some sort.
Maybe, but out just down your backyard on a chain. So Dearborn is saying, no, there's going to be a limit.
Even in the backyard. Yeah.
Well, it's for the dog's safety. And
well, of course it is.
And then Councilwoman Lisa Hicks Clayton, who authored that particular resolution or amendment, said, you know what? Imagine being locked up for a couple hours as a human. She goes, dogs get bored, and then that's when they cause trouble. That's how they get out.
Yeah, I would think it should be illegal, and I think there's some criteria that they can intervene if there's any sort of cruelty to pets, significant pet abuse. But what is significant enough for, let's say, the police to take action, not just the animal control?
And that's a good point, because there is no animal control in Dearborn Heights. They rely upon Taylor. The police in Dearborn.
That's right.
But the shelter would be in Taylor, or maybe by a stretch in Dearborn. Mm-hmm. But I understand the police are allowed to act as ordinance officers.
There used to be an Animal Planet series about Detroit animal control, and I forget what the group was called, but they were sort of independent of the cops, but they actually were able to, you know, go in and bust down the door and save animals and
it was actually,
you know,
really
from abuse.
Show.
And yeah, it was. But they rerun it on Animal Planet for quite a few years, and it was actually shot maybe 10 years ago.
Right.
Mostly, it was like I think it was on for 4 years or something. And we even interviewed one of the people that was in it way back when. But one of the but I can't remember. Was it Wayne County Animal Control?
It was something like that. But it was not a humane society. But
no,
it,
no.
But, yeah. I do want to say there's a lot more to this story, and the articles come out in the Press and Guide on Sunday, and there, a lot of things will be resolved between now and the next meeting on the 11th.
Yeah, and we usually reinforce this. You can't tell what a story is really completely about until, first of all, you read the whole story.
Sure.
And the Dearborn Heights and the Press and Guide, there's several stories we're going to be talking about during this hour today, the remaining 47 minutes. And our summary is not everything. All the spins and turns and even the interpretations and the conclusions we are coming to, remember, our opinions are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. But nonetheless, if you read the whole article, you may make other conclusions, and that's great. Of course, one story does not necessarily make the truth, even
right.
if it has different points of view. But Dennis's stories on Dearborn Heights is going to be featured in the Press and Guide in upcoming weeks, and the story that he's just commenting on here will be in this Sunday's Press and Guide upcoming.
And so. I do want to say that I will have, you know, we're doing the new Dearborn Heights News and Views on a monthly basis now, and the next show will be September 11th, and I will have some comments from Lisa Ferens, who will be on the ballot against Joe Kaczynski November mm-hmm. 6th. Of course, he's got a little more name recognition. Now, this guy, he was in city council for 21 years, from 78 through 99, so he does have a lot of experience, and he was the chair for the last 4 years.
Yeah, you should know something.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll see.
Yeah, remember, Dearborn Heights News and Views is now going to be on WHFR.FM every second Tuesday of the month, and it'll be from 1 to 2 p.m., but also... You say you're going to be busy on September the 11th from 1 to 2 p.m. It's going to be archived, as all of our talk shows are, including the journal here, on our website, whfr.fm. Just click on Talk Shows and click on either Monday Forum or Tuesday Forum. In this case, obviously, the second Tuesday, it's Tuesday Forum, and choose the date. And September 11th is the one. So if you're not going to be around on the 11th or not till later the day, do you think about it? You can get that sort of in-depth background piece from Dennis, and maybe Ned Apigian will be coming by, and also some of the movers and shakers from Dearborn Heights every month. That's going to be cool.
And I just want to say I can't imagine anybody not being around to listen to this on the Okay, I guess I think a little too highly
well,
of the show.
You know, once you get involved with the politics, okay, it seems like small potatoes in a way, and it's very personality-driven, but local politics at the local city or township level are amazing.
Amazing.
They're fascinating. They're beyond belief, in fact, in some cases, whether it's the range of intelligence or stupidity you see, or the lack of planning, the lack of preparation in some cases. But things need to get done, and sometimes democracy is not pretty. You know, sometimes there's ebb and flow, you might say. But it, you know, what matters most to you, as quoted by Jack Lessenberry too, is what happens in this state, and in fact, even in your city, in terms of your everyday life. It's right there locally, and we've said that on this show, which is why we are so local on the WHFR Journal, just Dearborn and the surrounding communities. And we get more in depth with the help of the local papers, of course, and special reporters like Dennis, than any other media program that's trying to say they cover local news. And that's because it is so important, and that you can make an impact back up. Much more likely that you can change things locally or in the state than if you try to, you know, write a letter to federal government and make a change.
I've seen it over and over again at these council meetings where somebody will stand up at the end when the public is allowed to petition. You know, they have their 3 minutes. And
public,
it
comments.
Public comments. Public comments. Mm-hmm. And they talk about things. And when it's a serious issue, you know, some people, and I'm not being mean, but some people love the sound of their own voice, and maybe the issues aren't as significant as others. But I've seen changes within weeks because of mm-hmm. an issue brought up, and then the next thing you know, there's a resolution. So
I've seen it many times, that same sort of thing happening at Dearborn Board of Education meetings.
Absolutely.
Too.
Is that local?
The power of one person. In
right.
fact, sometimes one person standing up and bringing something to the attention for the first time of the board, it's sort of shocks them into action. Well, we're going to look into that, or no, that's not going to happen, or we'll have our superintendent look at that right away.
That's exactly
and,
right.
And it's just one person. Sometimes if there's a group there, in fact, forget it. Just let them talk and we won't do anything. But the power of one person, it's amazing at the local level. And sometimes, of course, it depends who you are,
I guess. Especially when they cry.
I wanted to ask you too, Dennis. Apparently you've read the article in Dearborn Press and Guide this last Wednesday. This is the most controversial article, I think, in terms of community controversy. We have proclaimed the great success of Hype Athletics in building a recreational and social service center out in Dearborn Heights. And now it looks like, through either misunderstandings or actual falsification of status to someone, Hype is now behind on taxes to Dearborn Heights, and that tax collection apparently has been passed through to Wayne County, too.
And their taxes, Hype does not feel they owe because they believe they're exempt as the part of their nonprofit status.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really the big question. Are they nonprofit or not? Because Ali Syed, who we've had on the show when he was running for Dearborn Council, he maintains, and I think he said there's 6 points that would make him a nonprofit, and he meets all the criteria of each point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a $150,000 bill right now, and that's escalating.
It's building every month. Building. Yeah, because it's, first of all, it's even though they say they're going to give back a lot, it's what, 32 or 36 acres that were turned over to them. And I think now that they've got the $12 million facility built and now operating on an everyday basis, they're going to give back something like 26 to 28 acres. So maybe they won't have to pay taxes on what they give back. But right now, they're paying taxes on the whole 32, 36 acres, which became taxable maybe just by, I think we were reading the article, a matter of days that it slipped into the taxable status.
That was the Wayne County representative said, why didn't they just wait the 2 days? Because as soon as it was transferred, it was no longer tax exempt. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I'm having trouble. I think that there was a total amount of acres, and I think they're giving 26 back is what I read.
And I don't want anyone to jump to conclusion here that this is a negative story. Like maybe the headlines might say, Hype Center owes back taxes. You know, it may not be justified at all, and whether it was just a few days not being aware of certain legal deadlines or changes that somebody acted inappropriately there. I want to commend Joe Slezak, who is now the primary writer. We got to get him on the show here, Dennis.
He's a staff writer there. Yep.
Yeah, at Dearborn Press and Guide. This story, and I want to commend Tim Powers. Maybe it was a slow week, though, because there's like almost 2 full pages of text. I mean, top to bottom, if you put it, pieced it all together, I think it's 3 pages, it continues on. But it's one of the most in-depth stories in a single edition of the Press and Guide I've seen for years.
And he's encompassed all of it from almost the history, beginning.
And of course, a good reporter would submit a story like that, but rarely did they have the space available to publish it all, so they just chop it off, you know, a third of the way down or halfway down. So I'd like to say that most things are usually more complicated. They usually have more perspectives and points of view than anybody should properly summarize at the outset. So don't jump to a contusion here about Hype Athletics. It's still going to be worked out in court, and they're going to have to review their status. Now, I do have to say, because I have had reliable sources, which I can't mention on the air, and you can't sue me for this. I think I have reporters' prerogative here, that even several years ago, they doubted the nonprofit status of Hype Athletics in Dearborn when it was just based in their office is actually in the former Chamber of Commerce office on Michigan Avenue near Greenfield. Even today, that's where the offices are. And I think it's because they basically run under a membership criteria. In other words, they provide services for people who are members, sports, recreational activities, and some social services. And I thought it was quite reasonable for some of the sporting things. They do a couple of free clinics and other free services, but basically, you know, it's not all free. And in fact, most of what they do requires payment up front on a monthly basis. Maybe they have like per activity charge for workshops or something.
Like the Y does, but these prices are pretty darn, I mean, these
I don't know how the judges or the state criteria for nonprofit status is going to come down on this. All I know is that this sort of rumor among people who should know. I mean, really credible sources, I'm suggesting here, who mentioned this to me a couple of years ago, is that Hype is not truly nonprofit. And then, of course, Ali, when he was here, he even said, well, we have a for-profit part and we have a nonprofit part.
That's exactly what he said.
So which one owns Hype Athletics in Dearborn? You know, I guess he thinks the nonprofit one does, or they wouldn't try to protest the payment of these taxes.
And what, and some of the things, I mean, you look at some of the benefits of being a nonprofit. He bought 7.5 acres from the county in 2009 for a dollar. He received a $6.8 million grant from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. Mm-hmm. And then the state gave him nearly $1 million in brownfield development. Money.
Yep.
So he's got a lot of money here. Now, just exact numbers. Hype cleaned up 36 acres it received from the county and plans to return 28.5. They've cleaned it up. There was a lot of contamination. So they did a really good service there. So you're right. There are a lot of positives.
The brownfield incentive money has been here. I remember Mayor Guido was one of the first mayors to actually utilize that money for certain parts of Dearborn.
That's awesome.
And that's one of those things. Yeah, big government did it. State of Michigan did it. There was no other way to get that land into the possibility of new local development with all that toxic waste
sure.
in it. And so having the federal, the state government in this case, give money to that, there may be some federal funds involved in brownfield redevelopment too. I'm not sure. It only makes sense to me, and I think it's been a great success wherever it is. But yes, if I could be a nonprofit, I would love to be a nonprofit. No taxes. Yeah. No taxes. I could buy property for a dollar or whatever. But there's those criteria, and you have to have an organization. But especially, you have to have a good lawyer.
Right. Well, that's true.
Well, seriously, you got to know how to apply and how to stay legal. And documents have to be filed every year, so you can't just fool around and spend the money too foolishly if you're a nonprofit. But some are better nonprofits than others in terms of returning the money they collect for actual services. And I know that it's been, people always ask, like around Christmas, who have a little extra money, which are the good nonprofits for me to donate to?
Dennis Reimers.
There you go. As soon as you qualify for that nonprofit status. Okay. And the criteria, I've heard that these organizations that actually rate and rank the efficiency, that they use efficiency of the money collected. And that is, they say the efficiency should be at least 80% of the money collected goes directly into the services they're talking about. So in other words, their overhead, their administrative cost, and profit, that is saving some money for a rainy day or research and development, whatever, is only 20%.
Mm.
So that's an interesting question for Hype Athletics.
It is.
Okay, what percent of the money that you receive, I don't care, federal government or whatever, it's all kind of taxpayers' money, isn't it, is actually going to these services. Obviously, the money they collect from the people who are paying memberships are going to the services, but how much the services cost? I'd just like to know. Now, maybe the efficiency is not the only thing. Some people say that's not the only way. I mean, some operations require, let's say, more efforts of direct mail funding requests in order to get people to give, because maybe it's a disease that's lesser known,
not as
publicized. So you've got to send the mail out, you've got to make the phone calls, a lot more to get the funding you need. So maybe you're only like 50% efficient or 40%, but you're really trying very hard, and you're not, you know, you're not corrupt. But I'm just, so that efficiency rating is not everything, but often some of the national organizations that say which nonprofits are better ones to give money to, if you're concerned about the majority of your money going to the actual service that you intend, then of course the efficiency rating would mean something. It doesn't necessarily, it's not the only criteria for a good nonprofit though.
A great example, when we did the homelessness awareness marathon a couple of years ago, and we were down talking to Cass Community Services, and the gentleman I was talking to, the operations manager, brings out this slick folder with brochures, and it's glossy and full color. And I said, you know what? I don't want to tell you how to do your business, but you could save a couple bucks by cutting back on these costs. He says, I'll tell you what, Dennis. He goes, we've tried it both ways. And he said, when you're going after the bigger donors and you're putting out $250 a plate dinners for fundraising, he says, writing stuff on a napkin or on typing paper doesn't work. You really do need that slick stuff. So it's exactly what you're talking about. Some of these, the money goes as an investment to get a return, a bigger return from some of the people that have more money. You're exactly right.
The other things we want to try to cover this hour, we're going to be listening to Jim Hightower and a couple of his comments just shortly. If there's time, I'd like to read, I know there won't be time. John Dingell, our U.S. Representative, 15th District, he has written an editorial opinion in the Times Herald. That's Times Herald, not Press and Guide. At least that's where it's covered this week. And it's an extended statement about, and as he calls it, the real story of the Romney-Ryan Medicare plan. He goes back in history. He follows the history of Medicare in this country. And, of course, he's a Democrat, yes. But nonetheless, there's so many great details in that. Yes, it's his opinion, but it's based on 50-plus years of experience.
Was it his father, one of the authors of the
Well, his father and even John, they preferred universal single-payer health care.
Mm-hmm.
Like Canada, England, Germany, France, all the countries of the world that are doing a better job at health care at a lower cost per person than we are.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, he's been supportive of Medicare and Affordable Health Care Act, now referred to as Obamacare, which is really just reforms and slight extension of Medicare. It still doesn't include everybody, but it should help national health care.
It's a heck of a start, sure.
Services. There's problems with it, just like almost anything. But anyway, you should read that, folks, okay? If you don't subscribe to the Dearborn Times Herald, sometimes it's a little hard to find on the newsstands various places. I think their press offices are still on Michigan Avenue, so just stop on by.
City Hall, sure.
Yeah, and, it's a little down the street. No, it's right across, pretty much. So just park in the back parking lot there and run in and grab a copy. Tell them WHFR sent you. Oh, you should pay for it. But yeah, you should really subscribe, folks. It's often they have things that the Press and Guide doesn't, and even their spin on the stories, it's very important. These things are not the same. Dearborn Press and Guide this Wednesday, Morris Goodman has an editorial opinion, which covers really three topics. Violence in the world, pretty big topic, huh?
Sure.
Unemployment in this country and political gridlock, not only in this country, but around the world. And I'd like to feature that if we have time in the second half hour here. Also, the whole question with fact-checking I'd like to bring up. There are people called fact-checkers, and they work for one of the organizations is factcheck.org.
Okay.
Another is publicintegrity.org. That's the website for the Center for Public Integrity. Okay, and then there are a few more, including various news organizations that I think are unbiased. And so I have some information to share about that, and also a comment from a person in the Romney campaign about how they don't listen to fact checkers. But that's a story into and unto itself. Also, we have an email directly from Michigan Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly. That's going to be a quiz at the end of the show. What is the name of the Lieutenant Governor of Michigan, okay, Brian Kelly, about the second bridge to Canada, that the TV ads are full of lies.
Yeah.
Okay, and people still are believing it, or at least in doubt, and you shouldn't be. And so we'd like to make that extremely clear to you that the ads, which are sponsored and paid for only by one person, Maddie Maroon, billionaire owner of the Detroit Ambassador Bridge, are full of lies. It's just that simple. And people I'll grab around the campus here, I think educated people, students, faculty, I still ask them, do you believe that the Michigan taxpayers will have to pay any money up front for the second bridge? And I think so. Yeah, I think we will have to pay something up front. Not a darn thing. Can I say darn?
Yes.
I just did.
Absolutely.
Not a penny.
Thank you, Canada, right?
Not a penny up front. And so we'd like to present some facts for you on that. And we'll see what else we get to. And Joe Sullivan's got a special report after the break about what the new CAFE standards mean to you.
Okay.
And, of course, I had CAFE for breakfast this morning. No, it's a French word for coffee.
A cafe, please.
The cafe standard just approved, recommended by the Obama administration, but actually approved by Congress, will mandate that the average manufacturer of cars must be 54.5 miles to a gallon by 2025, so 13 years from now. And that, by the way, they're currently doing 27 miles to a gallon. I wish I was getting that, but the cafes, the averages, fleet average, as they call it, are all your models added together. You got a few high mileage models and a few luxury cars that don't do so well, or sports cars. And it's interesting that a lot of people don't believe that the industry is already doing an average of 27 miles to a gallon with the cars that they make. You may not have one of those cars. Very few people do, but that's the way the averages are computed. So they're the Auto Week magazine. No, it's greenreports.org. It's a great web source about hybrid cars, electric cars, and economically fuel cars. They want to let you know what that means, because some people say, and in fact, there is a 2025 proposal that's going to be on the ballot this November about how Michigan energy should go for 25% renewable sources, 25% renewable energy sources by the year 2025.
How would that compare to other states? Because that's actually kind of...
It's already the case in other states. They already have this law.
I mean, the 25%, other states are working right for more. 25 is kind of on the low end, isn't it?
Yeah, as I said, that's no big deal. It shouldn't be. I mean, Michigan's not ready for it yet. It can't happen tomorrow, but giving them until 2025 is great. But just don't want to confuse these two issues, that ballot proposal about 25 by 2025, and that's a separate issue to think about from the CAFE standards, which are nothing to vote on there, folks. It's got to happen.
Right.
It was legislated. And so Joe is going to give us the real, what it means to you, real person, that those standards are in place. Because I know for some people, oh, that's impossible. Oh, that'll hurt the business of all these auto companies or blah, 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 blah. Okay, so Joe, boy, he's excited. He's going to be talking
right after
Hightower here.
Okay.
So here it comes. And Jim Hightower is talking about two things, the spreading corporate crime wave. Did you hear about that one? And where is the ethical balance of America's scales of justice? WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Can it really be a surprise that 4 out of 5 Americans have little to zero trust in big banks? That 62% of us believe corruption is widespread across corporate America? And that 3/4 of us sense that business corruption has increased in the past 3 years? We have these views because we keep having their ugliness thrust in our faces. Even after the scandalous greed that crashed Wall Street 5 years ago, the epidemic of fraud and finagling continues, with Bank of America, Barclays, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and J.P. Morgan Chase among the blue-chip names just recently in the news for gross violations of fundamental ethics by their top executives. Yet, not a single one of these felonious profiteers has had to do a perp walk. Add BP, ExxonMobil, the Cayman Island tax dodgers, and the wholesale corporate purchase of our government, and the only wonder is how even 20% of the public can retain any trust in these rapacious outfits. This ethical devolution is not about a few rogues, but about a whole corporate culture of entitlement, thinking they're above the law and common morality. Check out a recent survey of 500 senior financial executives. 125 of them, 1/4, said they thought that engaging in unethical or illegal behavior on the job was sometimes necessary to be successful. 26% said they had firsthand knowledge of executive wrongdoing, and 30% said the way they get paid creates incentives to violate ethical standards and the law. This is Jim Hightower saying the injustice is not just in the crimes, but also in the lack of punishment. If this corporate crime wave consisted of simple street robberies, Washington would declare martial law to deal with it. But even if caught, these muggers get off with a corporate fine. The scandals will keep spreading until someone has the guts to start jailing these culprits. Is it really fair and balanced? I don't mean the ridiculous Fox TV channel, whose right-wing ranters mock their own PR slogan, but rather a network that actually matters in our society, America's legal system. To check the balance of the scales of justice, look at how the system treats the very rich and the poor. As we've seen, Wall Street barons have grossly fattened themselves by running frauds and scams that wreak trillions of dollars in damages to working families, homeowners, and taxpayers. Yet, not a single one of them has been indicted or even seriously pursued by the law. More recently, such corporate profiteers as GlaxoSmithKline have paid billions of dollars in fines for serious criminal acts. But the executive criminals who pulled these capers have skated free without even being charged. Now, meet Gina Ray, who is neither a CEO nor a serious offender, but a hard-hit, low-income American. She's one of hundreds who are being jailed, not by the police, but by a growing network of corporate fee chasers empowered by state legislatures to fine and imprison poor people who've committed minor infractions. Ms. Ray, an unemployed 31-year-old in rural Alabama, got caught up in this privatized probation system over a speeding ticket. Her problem mushroomed and she was unable to pay. So the corporatized legal system locked her up and hit her with company fees for each of the 40 days she was behind bars. Her original $179 ticket has now surpassed $3,000. She was not told that she has a right to a court-appointed lawyer or offered any alternatives to more fines and jail. This is Jim Hightower saying, for more information, contact Southern Center for Human Rights. They're at www.schr.org.
Thank you. Jim Hightower, our nation's most credible and entertaining populist, and I mean that in a positive way. You could say he's a liberal, or you can say he's a conservative. He's really for the people, all the people equally, and he's pointing out corruption where he finds it. Yes, he does at jimhightower.com have a lot of things against numerous Republicans and a few crazy Democrats, too. So probably he goes after Republicans more often than, and he's got a few commentaries about Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan, too, of course. So if you want to hear his reasons about that, I just don't want to use those on this show either way, because the comments that I use from Jim Hightower, I think they are important issues for anybody, Democrat, Republican, or Libertarian, as Clint Eastwood pointed out last night. That is a totally viable third way of looking at things. Hope you had a chance to watch that Clint Eastwood presentation. A few Republicans are very upset with him because he didn't directly endorse Mitt Romney, first of all. He said, possibly we should have a change from Obama. And and he was interviewing an invisible Obama on stage. And
I got to see this.
And he said some things that were not mainstream Republican, but libertarian, because he is a libertarian, capital L. He has been when he ran for office as mayor of Carmel, California, and won and served a term or two. And he's always been capital L libertarian. And I'm wondering if he was at the Ron Paul rally in Tampa last weekend. Probably I didn't see him there. I wasn't there, but I watched on TV and C-SPAN too.
I think he'd have been visible if he'd have been there.
Yeah, yeah. That did include, if you ever look at that, a great speech by Ron Paul with great specifics, great program ideas. Makes sense to me, which you did not hear any specifics. You did not hear any details from Paul Ryan or Mitt Romney because, you know, they might be criticized.
Sure.
Well, of course, Paul Ryan had three or four things that
were too late.
Wrong, facts that were wrong. He lied, yes, he did, in what he said. One of my favorite ones that's so clearly wrong, he said, oh, Obama, he took 700 and some out billion dollars, 700 plus billion dollars out of Medicare, as if that would hurt the people receiving it. Well, no, that was money that was not going to certain drug companies and health care providers, but guess what? That money was approved by Republicans in Congress to be taken out, including Paul Ryan. That's right. He voted in favor of removing that money. And guess what? It was even a cornerstone of Paul Ryan's infamous budget about what the future should be like in America. So he was not only recommending it, he voted for it himself, and he has the audacity to lie and upfront lie to the American public that he was not in favor of that, that he thought that was wrong. He wanted to give the impression, oh, that'll hurt anybody on Medicare. I didn't think Paul Ryan or the others wanted Medicare of any sort. They want to do private insurance and let it go, you know. So don't try to put the other spin on this, Paul. If you call it a spin, I call it outright lying, when in fact that same exact amount of money was voted on, including him, in Congress and approved to be eliminated in terms of trying to save costs for health care program overall. And It was even endorsed by him. Not only did he vote for that removal, endorsed by him in his own special little future budget proposal that he had. So, you know, but basically, no specifics, no details. And I'm just, I'm very cynical, I have to say, in my personal opinion. I'm sick and tired of hearing about people's family lives.
Really?
Even their religion. I don't care about what are they going to do when they're in office? What exact programs and plans are they going to do? I think anybody that has a big family or a small family or no family or who's a woman or a man or who's gay or straight or has 28 kids or no children, I'm fine with all of that. Okay, if they're fine with it, I'm fine with it. What are they going to do in office? What are they going to do in office? Shouldn't that matter most? Now you say, well, you never know what's going to do in office, but if they're a good family man, yeah, but being a good family man, what does that mean?
But how do you really
and
know?
How do you relate good family man to good businessman or good leader, political leader of a country? Excuse me, business and politics are not the same thing. They're not the same goals. So I'm sorry to disagree with Mitt Romney, but many people have about many things, and I disagree with Obama, too. I mean, I wish Obama would have had more political experience
right.
before he became president. I thought he was rather underqualified in terms of political experience. I think he's been masterful at what he's been able to do, however. But it's true, like Mitt Romney pointed out, a lot of people voted for him, majority, last time around because he had these things he wanted to get done. He hasn't got much of that done. But then again, he hasn't had Congress to help him because they've been Republicans who, at the outset, according to their leader, Mitch McConnell, our goal is to make sure Obama gets nothing done. Well, okay, you got the majority. You got it done. He got very little done. So Mitt Romney, you shouldn't criticize Obama for not getting much done because Republicans didn't make it happen. They wouldn't let it happen. So it's not Obama's fault. But, you know, let's just say, I'm sick and tired about these family stories. I've heard so many family stories, wonderful family. How does that relate to either working in business or working in government? I don't see the connection.
They're trying to show the character.
I don't see the connection. Yeah. Character is not the same thing. Character in politics is different than character in business and character in the family.
Sure.
Because I see things in a more complicated way, okay? I'm sorry. And I've seen people who are very religious do crazy things, immoral, unethical things to me in their everyday life. They may attend church or synagogue or whatever on Sundays or Saturdays, and then they're completely immoral the next day with their, you know, beat their kids or they drink too heavily or they cheat people in their business. I don't see the relationship between, you know, the good churchgoer automatically. I don't see a relationship there and everyday life
sure.
for a lot of these people. And am I generalizing? Sure. Did I say a majority? No. I just said a lot. I'd like to see an awful lot more. Somebody once said, I think it was Chesterton or someone, Christianity would be a great thing if anybody would ever try it. you know, it was put into practice that love is the answer and compassion for the poor of the world. And, you know, those are messages of historical Jesus. Check the Bible out, okay? And so I'm just saying I don't see the immediate direct connection between those different arenas, family life and or religion and business the world and the world of politics.
Can I say that most people do make that connection?
Well, of course they do. And I'm saying it shouldn't be done.
And I think that perception is being exploited. And I think you'll agree with that.
That's the idea.
So there it is. And whatever. Joe, we both said the same thing at the same time. When they bring up family, I remember when who was it from the Amway? Was it DeVos?
DeVos
was running for governor.
The head of Amway.
And he would have his daughter on in commercials without him. She would do it, you know, and that was supposed to help us make the connection that this was his daughter, and a lot of people did. He didn't win, but that's not the point, right?
Well, and Ann Romney gave a great speech. Typically, they don't have in the past anyway, they would not even involve the wife of the presidential nominee in these kinds of campaign speeches, especially not at a convention.
Sure.
Sometimes on the campaign trail, but usually in the shadow of their spouse.
You know,
conventions in the recent years have changed a lot since.
Oh, yeah.
Before it was really coming together and getting a nominee. But now it's all preordained, and now it's all a package for television. It's a PR. Both parties do this. It's,
right. That's why I'd really try not to watch either convention, because we know it's going to be very general, very slick. It's propaganda. It is propaganda. It is often lies, but it's so general. And it's just publicity. It's publicity and propaganda. You're not going to get specific details. In fact, even, you know, some of the reporters are trying to say, but the Republican platform, you know, says no abortions under no circumstances, for no reason. And, of course, Romney, a few years ago when he was governor of Massachusetts, said, well, of course, to sustain the health of the mother, if it was life-threatening for her, and in the cases of rape, and there was a third case that he was in favor of allowing abortion. No, platform is totally against all abortion for any reason. And then people were asked as delegates there at the convention, and they said, well, you know, Governor Romney hasn't said he was really for a lot of the planks in the Republican Party. And so their answer was, well, you know, nobody really has to follow the platform. Nobody's why, required to follow it after they get in office. And in fact, I know Joe and I are seniors, if I may share that with our audience, Joe. And we remember the 1950s and so on, and I remember all the platforms, Democrat and Republican. How many times did they even have one bill on those issues when they got in office? Almost never. Almost never. So what was the platform? Just publicity.
Rhetoric.
Oh, I'm all for that platform. Yeah, but even the delegates of the Republican Party say, well, nobody's really going to do that. Nobody's required to do it. Nobody, you know, so why even do it then? Because it's publicity for people who say, well, they said in the platform something that I totally believe in, you know. But there's no requirement that anybody has to follow it. And Mitt Romney didn't say he would. And, you know, Paul Ryan, well, I'm not sure where he's come down on that. Okay, Joe, the CAFE standards, again, the federal administration and through the what bureau is it? Anyway, it's not coffee standards, folks. It's about the gas mileage being required for the corporate average has to double. Basically, to 54.5 miles to a gallon by 2025. According to greenreports.org, what does that mean to the average person, you and me?
Well, it sounds like a difficult target to hit. After all, most efficient electric cars on sale at the moment average around 50 miles per gallon, hybrids, that is. Mm-hmm. And getting large sedans and sports cars to meet that target won't be an easy task. For most cars and light trucks, it will require efficiency to double. The expected benefits are clear. Greenhouse gas emissions would reduce by 6 billion metric tons, and dependency on oil will increase. What I would add one thing, though. Mm-hmm. If you get a 50 miles per gallon, you're going to drive twice as much if you get 25, because even if...
That's a good point. It's just like if you make more money, you'll spend more. I mean,
yeah,
that's what.
But
you're...
I mean, if, like, when the gas is like now, it's $4 a gallon.
Sure,
you're going to travel more.
You're going to travel.
You're going to burn the same amount of gas because you can afford to do that. You're saying,
that's,
maybe.
You know, that's just one.
I think that would be human nature.
Unfortunately, you're not consciously going to get a job, and that's the basic transportation. You're not going to necessarily drive to grocery stores further away, or your job is a certain distance. It's not going to get further away when your car becomes more efficient. So, but I understand you might plan longer trips,
right?
But they're not going to raise the number that so much. And it goes on to talk about number of jobs it's going to create. But people should know that a lot of these electric cars, like the Ford electric car, I think it's estimated, and you have to estimate electric cars because there's no gasoline involved. A hybrid uses some electric power and some gasoline power, and so the miles per gallon are 50 or more, and can easily be more than that with a hybrid. They just haven't released that technology yet. But the electric alone cars get estimated mileage. The Ford Focus, the last one I saw, the last test I saw, was over 100 miles to a gallon estimated. So it's like energy cost. No gasoline, so it's not really miles to a gallon, but a similar estimated energy cost our operational cost of about 100 miles to a gallon, even though there's no gas involved at all. And most electric cars should actually get much better than that, 150 to 200 miles to a gallon, estimated equivalency to the operational cost of a gas-powered engine. I have also an article from greenreports.org. I love these people because every day, boy, do they do automotive news that's right on target, you know. I mean, right on target for energy efficiency, less polluting cars every single day. And they have reports from all around the world, and they write it entertainingly. They do a better job than the auto magazines out there, you know, Car and Driver, Road and Track, Automotive News, Auto Week. And the one, the car I want, and it was introduced as a concept only, is the XL1 Volkswagen, the Volkswagen XL1. And it's going to get an estimated mileage of 260 miles to a gallon.
Wow.
260. Now, well, this is what it is. It's powered by it's a hybrid. It's powered by less than 1 liter twin cylinder turbo diesel engine. There's that diesel again. You know, my big honkin' SUV has a diesel engine. I get 22 miles to a gallon around town, and I'm getting 34 miles to a gallon on the highway at expressway speeds of 70 plus.
Clean diesel, too.
Clean diesel,
that's
yes.
That's awesome.
Yes. And it's a 5,000-pound car, for
right.
Pete's sake. It shouldn't be getting that kind of gas economy. But a lot of people with little small cars are not getting that, and that's because it's a diesel, folks. And this is a Volkswagen diesel, and they're certainly known for their clean diesels and their smaller cars, which are really top-notch technology. But it's that turbo diesel is powered and is connected to a 20-kilowatt electric motor, okay? And so the diesel engine is only there to power the motor.
Okay.
So the diesel is not, the engine is not connected to the electric batteries, which are then connected to the electric motor. So it's constantly running, but very efficiently, like all small turbo diesels, and very cleanly. And this thing is really swoopy. The concept car is here. Looks like the old Honda Insight, in fact. It's only a two-seater. Okay, it's only a two-seater, but it's really swoopy, that little picture there. Dennis can see it now. And what they're going to do is they're going to have 100 of these available. But not in the U.S. No, not in the U.S. Because we're, we don't believe in diesels, or we don't believe in high efficiency. But next year in Europe, they're going to have 100. So it's beyond the concept stage now. 100 for sale, just to show people it works. I mean, it works now. And I buy one in a flash because I don't need any more storage than transportation than that.
It's so futuristic looking too. Do you like
that?
Oh,
I love the look. So yeah. Swoopy, so aerodynamic. It even has, like in the 50s, it has the rear wheels are covered
That's what it reminds me of.
The wheel covers, they call them. What are they? It's actually panels they put in, so you can't really see the rear wheels except how they come below the chassis of the car. And
that was the front.
In the 50s, that was customized. No, that's the back.
That's cool.
Okay. The front wheels aren't covered. But
no, you're right.
In the 50s, they actually would customize some cars, and they'd actually have these panels that would just clip into place, and you couldn't actually see the wheels. They were actually hidden and make the car more swoopy looking. So is there anything wrong with that? No. In fact, the Union of Concerned Scientists, a nonprofit that I'm supportive of, and we've had some of their experts, they're based in Washington, D.C., on the air here. They talk about energy efficiency and the problems of nuclear power, and it's a great organization. A lot of scientists, of course, the Union of Concerned Scientists, I guess the name says it all, or it should, and we've had them on this show talking about how these technologies are not impossible for car manufacturers who used to fight them. In fact, who made the Volt possible at Chevy?
It wasn't Brian Kelly.
No. No. The Volt, by the way, Senator Levin drives a Volt in Washington, D.C. Of course, he sort of had to with the GM bailout.
Right.
And he's from Michigan, you know. But he's the only senator who's driving a Volt. But there's a senator from Tennessee. He's driving a Nissan Leaf.
Okay.
Why? Because the Leaf is made in Tennessee.
Okay.
That's all electric. And that senator just passed a bill saying that the Senate parking garage should have electrical outlets for plug-in cars.
It's because he needs one now.
Because he needs one.
That's
yes,
great.
That's right. Because he needs one.
You know, they really should have some chargers here.
Yeah, right. But Levin has said he hasn't put gas in his Volt for months because he's within the range of the batteries in the Volt. No, it was, I'm blacking out his name now, but it was the guy that was at Ford, and then he was at Chrysler. He saved Chrysler, the bailout, the big, powerful guy.
Lutz, was it?
Lutz, yes, Bob Lutz. And, no, I was thinking of that other Ford guy, the invented the Mustang.
Iacocca?
Yeah, it wasn't Iacocca, it's Lutz. And Lutz, you know, he's written books about how he's always had to challenge GM bureaucracy. You know, they had an electric car and then they killed it because in the 90s, even though it was a great success with the couple hundred people in California that they gave it to,
right,
and it should have survived and it would have been so much better now even, but oh no, they had to kill it because, ooh, they were too conservative or they didn't want to come up with new ideas or they didn't want to hurt the gasoline companies by having a car that didn't have any gas. It's sort of what I've heard in Ford Motor Company here. Ford got out of the monorail business because they actually were trying to sell a really bad design, a monorail. They were going to get into competition with different cities to put in monorails for them. And somebody finally at Ford said, you know, every monorail we put in is going to lose us car sales.
Duh.
It's contradictory to our basic business. So let's get out of that. Of course, they had this stupid idea, and they put one in here at Fairlane Town Center as a test, and it went from
the Hyatt
sure. to Fairlane Town Center. And it was a road-based one. So there was like an elevated road. And, of course, the first thing to happen in Michigan winter, it snowed.
Mm-hmm.
It got cold. It got icy. The monorail wouldn't go anywhere because it runs on rubber tires on an extended roadway that has no drains, a raised roadway that has no drains.
It was an ice rink up there.
It was an ice rink. So every winter you'd see them stuck and crash sideways in the middle of the monorail. I mean, you know, people have been building monorails for like 40, 50 years. None of them were designed like that.
No.
And Ford puts in something like this, right here in Dearborn? How crazy do you have to be to not understand about snow and cold and ice in Michigan winter? Anyway, you don't want your business to hurt somebody that's related to your business and vice versa.
Right.
So they didn't want to have the big gas companies fighting them politically. So they dropped that electric car. But no, it was Lutz. When he finally went back this last time, I think he's back at GM again, but he went back and then he quit again and he went back. But the second from last time he went back, he said, we've got to do this Volt. We've got to do a plug-in hybrid. We have to. And he was one person that used to say like a decade ago, oh, it's going to hurt our business. We can't do electric, can't do hybrid. You don't raise that gas average. You'll do more business. Like for Joe's reason, right? Because people can drive farther on that tank, you know? You're going to get more people excited about driving if the costs are going to come down. And also, you know, that we're less dependent on that foreign oil.
Plus business climate's changed. And so has the world's global climate.
Yep. So that's our big idea for Labor Day, our special Labor Day show here in the new WHFR Journal from Henry Ford Community College. Dennis, Joe, and I have a couple more minutes. We're waiting for Joanne Korchinska, our host of Highway 61, to come in the big door here. And so we know that our podcast will continue for another minute or two. So let's see, any wrap-up stories. I wanted to just really brief. You know, we want to mention two political parties that are going to be on enough states that technically if you voted for them and enough people voted for them, they could actually have enough delegates in Electoral College to win the presidency. And one is the Green Party, but the larger party, Clint Eastwood's favorite party, is the Libertarian Party. And they're both going to be on the ballot in Michigan. Jill Stein here has written a stunning support for labor and Labor Day, of course, coming up Monday and what it means and the history of that. And that's at her website. Jill Stein, she is their presidential candidate. She's a doctor, a medical doctor.